Yo, what is going on, everybody? It's your boy, Amateur Maxi, bringing you episode number 10 of the Amateur Analytics Podcast. That's it, baby. We hit it. Big 1-0, episode 10. I'm so excited because today on this episode, I actually got a lot of stuff to talk about. Today is August 13th, in which I'm recording this episode. And basically, I just got some gaming stuff. We got an analysis based on some One Piece characters. And without further ado, let's jump into that. Well, actually, hold on. Like, how y'all doing? How's everybody doing? If you listen to this podcast, I hope your day's going well. You know, hope you're enjoying yourself. I know it's been kind of tough out here, you know, with all that's going on in the world. But I hope, you know, you're finding some type of, like, happiness, something to look forward to. And hopefully this podcast is one of those things that you look forward to hearing when I actually drop them. But yeah, let's jump into it. So, while in the video game section, like I said, it's a video game section as usual. Then I got an analysis instead of like chapter reviews. I will be doing chapter reviews on the next podcast because a lot's been going down in both My Hero and especially in One Piece. But we'll be talking about that on the next episode. But starting out with my video game stuff, the Xbox Showcase was back in July. I believe it was the 23rd. And not gonna lie, it was kind of okay. I wasn't really impressed. Microsoft, you're not doing a good job of convincing me on why I should buy an Xbox. But let's talk about what was in it. There was a lot of stuff that they showed, and they did the thing that I was joking about in the last podcast that I didn't want to see, which is the whole talking about the history of Xbox and all of the chain and how they're innovating and all the other bullcrap that I didn't want to hear. But they actually did show some games, and that's cool. So, of course, let's talk about it. The big one, Halo Infinite. Halo Infinite was shown, and not gonna lie, it looked okay, I guess. Graphically, it looked fine, but I heard it's going to be an open world game, so maybe that's why it doesn't look as like sharp as it could look. You know, it's one of those things where I think people were expecting a little more, and for it not to be as like, you know, as like graphically intensive as we thought, it's a little disappointing, not gonna lie. But it's cool though. It's cool for the Halo fans. I know Halo fans have been waiting forever to actually play a new Halo game. So it's nice to finally see that Xbox is answering the call and giving them the Halo that they've wanted for so long. But unfortunately, this is recently. This wasn't during the showcase, but this is recently announced. I think it was announced probably like 2 days ago at this point. Two, maybe 3 days ago, that it is actually getting pushed back until 2021. Now, that's interesting because the way they were presenting it to us as if it was going to be the Xbox Series X's launch title and maybe like one of the early launch games, but now it's gotten pushed back till next year, which they made a statement, but I don't think it's COVID related. It didn't really say anything about the virus, like COVID and how it affected game development. They kind of just say they wanted to take a greater look at it and like polish the game and make some changes and provide a better experience for the players who've been waiting for this game for so long, which makes me think that they saw the backlash from people saying the game was like a 360 game. Yeah, people were actually saying that, and I was like, oh my god, like, come on, guys. It doesn't look that bad, but people were saying it looked like a 360 game, so maybe they saw that backlash and was like, you know what? Let's go back. Let's try to polish this game up a little bit, clean it up, make it look a little better, and, you know, hopefully that gets them, you know, positive reception. But I also feel like while doing that is cool in terms of like, you know, them wanting to polish their game, it makes the fans that have been waiting want it puts a little bit of pressure on them, in my opinion, because it's like now people are expecting this game to be, well, as perfect as it can be. So it's like, if you guys say, oh, we're taking time to like add more to it, and if the game comes out and it still looks the same and it comes out with a bunch of problems, people are going to be like, oh, well, what was that about? You guys said you were delaying the game to make changes to make it look better, and it still looks just like the preview that we saw back during the Xbox showcase. So I hope they actually live up to it. I hope they actually really do go in there and polish things and change things and make it look a lot better, because honestly, like I said, it didn't look too impressive. I'm not the biggest Halo fan anyway, but, you know, I was hyped for Halo fans. You know, I was hyped for them. Like, you know, it was gonna be dope. But it's cool. It's interesting to see that they are actually going back and like gonna be like reworking it and like fixing it up and touching it up. So next, next after Halo, or at least the other big thing to me that I saw after Halo, was Fable. Fable's back. If I remember correctly, I could be wrong, but I believe the last Fable game was on Xbox 360. And it's been a long time since Fable has been on the scene. And that's good that Fable is back. You know, they didn't really show any gameplay. It was like a little CG trailer of like a frog eating a fairy. You saw a sword in the title of the game. This came on. This like appeared on the screen. I thought that was cool. But it's nice to see that it's back. It's been, like I said, it's been a really long time since a Fable game. And I think it's going to be like interesting to see like what they do with this Fable game. Because from what I understand, I never played the Fable games myself, but I have seen some of them in action. It was a lot of like cool character customization, a lot of like detailed detailed lore in the series. And I know in some instances, like if you went down like darker paths and stuff like that, your character physically started to change to reflect the type, like the nature in which, like to reflect what type of person they were becoming, what type of person you were making them. So to see that, you know, finally be shown off again and be brought back, and I'm curious to know what, you know, what new things are they going to add to the game, or they're going to bring back from the previous game, just to, you know, make Fable fans comfortable, you know, and see if there's any way maybe they innovate with something new, introduce a new mechanic or new system, you know, because I, like I said, I really liked, like I said, I never played them, but I did see stuff, and I've always liked that, that aspect of like your character, as your character gets stronger, it starts to reflect it in their appearance, not just in like their skill set. Like I said, if you become more of like an evil, darker person, your character starts to become darker. They look more like sinister as you go along. And I thought that was really dope. I think that's a really cool thing. So like I said, for the Fable fans, I'm happy for y'all. Maybe, who knows, like maybe this one will be good. Hopefully it's good. You know, it's been a long, long time. Like I said, I could be wrong about the 360, but I'm pretty sure the Fable 3 was on the 360. And that was the last one that came out. So it's good to see that they're actually listening, I guess, to people. You know, like they're actually showing people what they want to see. So I'm looking forward to that. And honestly, everything else was kind of just eh. You know, like nothing really like stood out. The rareware game that was shown didn't look that interesting. I know Sea of Thieves has done well, like it's doing great financially, so that's pretty interesting. I didn't think Sea of Thieves was something that a lot of people play, but I guess, you know, the audience is there and it is what it is. So that's really cool. And it's nice. It was nice to see that they have something else in development, but I didn't see anything else. And then there was that one game, the Gunk. I think it was called the Gunk, and I was just like, ooh. I mean, it doesn't look bad, but like, kind of an interesting title, but like, you gotta show us a little bit more. They show us like a little bit of teaser, which I respect, you know, some, like, at least they showed us some sort of gameplay, unlike these other games where they just show titles and didn't show anything, and it was nice. It looks okay, I guess, but other than that, still not convinced on this Xbox wave, man. Like, I'm not really impressed. I'm not really like, oh shit, I need to figure out a way to get an Xbox Series X. You know what I'm saying? Like, I still don't have a reason to really like look into this console. I just don't see it. I just don't see it. You guys are trying, you know, I respect it, but like, you gotta show me something. You gotta show me something, man. You gotta show me something crazy. Show me something I ain't seen before. I don't know. You gotta throw some flair on it. I don't get it. Like, I know. And I'm not trying to sound like a Sony fanboy, but like Sony, they don't always do great with their conferences either. Because honestly, this State of Play that came out recently wasn't really anything spectacular. But like, they show me stuff that I'm interested in. They show me some games. They show me some gameplay. They show me things that like, okay, I don't know if this is my type of game, but they show stuff. Stop, like, Xbox, show stuff. Show us stuff. Stop talking about the history of Xbox. Like I said, they did that all throughout the thing. They did that all throughout the showcase. Oh, well, Xbox is about this, and we're trying to make it this way for gamers, and this and that. It's like, guys, that's nice. I respect it. But just show me some games. Please. Please just show me some games, man. Like, at the end of the day, like, you gotta go. In the words of TBH, you gotta appeal to your lowest common denominator, man. Some people are just here for the games. They don't care about the history of your company or what new systems you're trying to innovate on, bro. Just show us games. That's what we're here for. That's why I tuned into this thing for, was to see games. Show me games. Jeez, it's not that you guys, you know what I'm saying? Not like Sony's any better, but like, at least for the most part, I see a few games. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can get down with that. But Xbox, I'm always there just like, okay, I don't really care about this. Don't really care about that. Don't really care about this either. Oh, well, I guess nothing's really impressing me. So kind of feel like I wasted my time, but it is what it is. Like I said, just hopefully, you know, Fable comes out really well. Hopefully Halo Infinite gets that rework that it needs and gets the touch, and it comes out and is a stellar game. Like I said, I hope that's the case for Halo fans. And I said for Fable, same thing. I hope Fable is worked on with love, and hopefully they don't have any crunch time or rush development, and they really bring it. Like I said, those are two franchises that people really want to see again. And that, honestly, like I said, I never played them, but I got to give them their flowers. They were, you know, they were popular, they've been popular, and they're really dope franchises outside looking in. I just, you know, never had an Xbox to actually play them, so. But, yeah, that's it for Xbox Showcase. Like I said, if I had to give it a rating, if I had to give it a grade, I guess, maybe like a C. Nothing really. I wasn't bored, but at the same time, I wasn't really like, oh shit, I gotta get an Xbox, or oh shit, maybe I should look into, you know, maybe I actually want to look into some of these games. I wasn't really like super impressed. Moving on, the Sony State of Play was last week. It was August 6th, I believe. So yeah, that was honestly kind of the same thing on the Xbox Showcase. It wasn't really nothing crazy. They showed more Crash Bandicoot. 4, which I think is cool. I'm probably not gonna play it though. I'm kind of weird when it comes to Crash Bandicoot. I am a fan. I have played like the original trilogy, and I even bought the Insane trilogy, and I own that, and like I played it, but I don't know if I'm really like super gung-ho about playing 4, but I will say it does look good. I love the art style and how this game looks. It really feels like how I think Crash would look. Like the Insane trilogy looked good, but it even feels like this game kind of shifted its art style a little bit from the Insane trilogy, because I feel like the Insane trilogy was clearly, you know, trying to be as faithful, trying to modernize as much of the original Crash as they did. Like they were trying to stay faithful kind of to his old design, but in this Crash Bandicoot 4, he looks a little different. It's cool that you get to play as Coco. They kind of go over like some of the details of how, like, oh, you know, like you get to play as Coco, you get to play as Cortex, which is interesting. And we got a little bit of the backstory about what's going on. Apparently, like all these masks are like, all the masks are like linked to like some greater power, and Cortex is trying to harness the power with Aku Waku and this new villain. I forgot his name, but they're trying to harness the power of the mask, and the mask decide to help Crash and Coco, and it gives them all these special abilities. I think one of them like slows down time, another one adds like, it's like a different, it's like switches dimensions, which allows you to jump on platforms that are in another dimension. So I think that's pretty cool. The mechanics look like it's there. Like I will say this, like I say, even though I'm not on like the biggest Crash Bandicoot wave, and I don't even know if I'm gonna get this game, but I will say it is cool to see that they took the original formula for Crash Bandicoot and innovated it in a way that feels like a natural progression of what Crash Bandicoot 4 would have been had it come out, you know, back in the 90s or early 2000s when the Crash Bandicoot series was like at its peak. And it makes me think of pretty much like how Mega Man 11 came back. Like, I don't know if anybody played Mega Man 11, but Mega Man 11, you know, it kind of went back to its roots, you know, but at the same time, it still brought a fun new gimmick where it still felt fresh. Obviously, they updated the graphics to make it look better, but like, you know, they added a new little gimmick that added new stages. It just felt like a natural progression of Mega Man. It was really, it felt like the sequel to Mega Man 10, and that's what I feel like with Crash Bandicoot 4. It really feels like it's a sequel to Crash Bandicoot 3. It feels like it's the next game in the series, you know, and I really, really like that. I appreciate, you know, the studio that's working on it, keeping faithful to like the platforming and like just giving little nudges to make it better. Like I said, the masks give you special abilities, but other than that, at the end of the day, it's still a platformer. It's still a 3D hallway platformer that hasn't changed, and I appreciate that. I appreciate them staying with that consistency and really working to make it just a new fun Crash Bandicoot game. And it actually comes out October 2nd, so that's not too far away. So I think it's gonna be dope. Can't wait to see it in action. I like I said, if I really, you know, depending on how I feel, I might actually get it myself and play it. But it looks really, really good. The next thing they showed was Hitman VR, and I don't know. Like, I think it looks cool. Like, I think it looks cool. I'm not gonna take that away from it, but I'm still not on this VR wave. Like, I really just, I'm not feeling it, man. Like, I'm not feeling VR. I've tried VR, and I feel like it's one of those things where, like, the way I like to game, I like to just sit back and just play games for like two and a half hours. Usually that's like my time frame. I give myself like 2 hour, 2.5 hour time blocks to play games. But the thing is, it's like, with that, you can't really do that. And it's just, like I said, it doesn't really do with Hitman. I think it looks good. It's cool that it's coming out, and it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. But just to spring off into VR a little bit, it's like, I'm just not on this wave yet. Like, it hasn't done enough to convince me to get it, to even consider getting it. I'm not a fan. I know they have, like, an Iron Man game that came out, which is actually supposed to be within this weird Sony Marvel Universe continuity, because for those of you who don't know, the Spider-Man PS4 game is actually supposed to kick off this Marvel Sony video game universe. Like, Marvel's trying to do a video game universe, and it started with Spider-Man, and apparently the Iron Man game is set in the same time frame as the Spider-Man game. So it's going to be like this big, pretty much what they did with the cinematic universe, they're doing it in video games. And it's just like, but no one's trying to play a VR game, though. Like, I'm not feeling it, man. Like, until VR gets to the level of Nerve Gear, I don't know anybody who's listening to this who's seen Sword Art Online. Until we get to that level of VR, I'm not down. I'm really not on this VR wave. Like, I'm not on it, man. Like I said, it's just one of those things, like, I feel like I can't get my level of gaming experience that I want. It's fun for, like, novelty's sake and, like, casual play, but for someone who likes to actually sit down and just play video games for, like, maybe, like I said, two and a half hours at a time, or a session, that's, like, usually how I time myself. I just don't, VR just isn't it. I feel like it gives me a headache. I'd be bored, I'd be tired from standing and playing the game. I'd rather just sit back and relax. So yeah, this was supposed to be about Hitman, but I ended up talking about VR in general. But it's still, like, my point is, like, I'm just not on this VR wave, and they keep trying to push it at me, and I'm just like, guys, I don't want to play your VR game. And it sucks, because a lot of cool games are coming to VR, in terms of, like I said, it's a Hitman game, you have the Iron Man game, those games look cool, and they'd be fun to play, but I'm not picking up a VR, I'm not buying, I think it's like $250, almost $300 headset just to play those games. Like, I'm not doing it. It's not happening. But what else did they show? Oh, so the next thing they showed was actually a PS5 title, which is weird, because I could have sworn during the announcement they said it was going to be no major PS5 stuff, yet here they are showing us PS5 stuff. So one thing they showed was this game called The Pathless, and it reminds me of that game called Journey graphically, but it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Like, honestly, I don't know what it is, man. That art style, it really spoke to me. I'm like, yo, I'm really, really feeling this art style. Maybe, hopefully, it has, like, a cool story to go along with it. But art style-wise, it had me. I was like, bro, this game looks kind of nice. And the movement, oh my god, the movement. It feels like that game is going to flow so nice, and I can't wait to actually play it. Like, this is one of those games, honestly, I was thinking about it earlier, and even right now as I'm talking about, the more I think about it, I'm like, bro, I might have to get this game. This is probably going to be a cop for me on the PS5, because it's something about it. I don't know. Hopefully it has, like, a really good story, because that's usually what, you know, that's one of those games that looks like it's going to have a deep story, and I hope it does, because the gameplay looks fun. You know, at the end of the day, the gameplay looks good. That's enough to get my attention. You know what I'm saying? Now, show me, you know, give me a little bit more. Give me a cool story. Because it looks like what you're doing in this game, you pretty much are just, you're just an archer. Or, like, you're a hunter, but, like, you shoot arrows. So, like, when you shoot an arrow, it gives you more momentum. It gives you, like, a little, like, you collect, like, this aura stuff to boost your speed. So, basically, you're just running around an area exploring, and you're shooting random, like, targets and gaining more speed. But every once in a while, or when you explore, you'll come across, like, these demon monster things, and you have to fight them. Like, you gotta, like, fight them, chase them down. It's like these long running battles where, like, you're chasing down and arrowing them and dodging their attacks. You have, like, a little pet eagle that when you jump in the air, it can glide with you. It's just the movement, man. If you guys haven't seen it, go look it up. The Pathless. It looks so dope. The flow of movement, the gameplay looks so buttery smooth, and I cannot wait. Like I said, the more I talk about it, the more I actually want to play it. So this is something that I might cop. So far on the PS5, me buying games wise, it was definitely Spider-Man, Miles Morales. That was definitely gonna happen. It was The Little Devil Inside, which is another cool looking game. And that's another thing. This game, The Pathless, reminds me of The Little Devil Inside. If you guys haven't seen that, go check that out too. It was announced during the PS5 reveal. That's what the art style reminds me of. And I'm really digging these, like, cartoony cell shaded art styles. I don't know if it's just me, but I'm really rocking with these styles. Like, they look really good to me. Like, it's something really appealing. And I think, you know, I haven't really played games in that art style, because usually the art style isn't something like I'm like super focused on, but usually just obviously like the gameplay or whether it's a franchise that I really want to touch on or something like that. So, but I think it's cool. I think it's cool. So hopefully, you know, this game comes out around the time the PS5 launch, because I think it'd be a nice little launch game to hold me over until, you know, another game comes out, or unless Spider-Man drops with the launch, which I don't believe it is. But, you know, it's nice to see. It was a nice game. It was a really nice game. The other game that they showed that had another interesting art style, I'm probably going to be talking about art styles a lot when it comes to these games, but another game that had an interesting art style, I don't know how to pronounce this game. It's called Anno Mutation. Mutationum. It looks like it was like a weird like 2D 3D art style game. Like the main character is like a 2D sprite, but she's walking around in like these weird like 2D/3D rendered backgrounds. It looks like there's a lot of fighting, like she has like swords, and like it looks like the game's based in Japan, so it's probably some like a Japanese developed game, but it looks like it's based in Japan, like everyone's fighting and she's like fighting like these cool monsters, very similar to the Pathless. Like it looked like a fighting, like a nice little smooth fighting. The combat looks smooth. It has like some little platforming elements that looked really smooth, and I thought that looked dope. I thought it was another game. I was like, okay, you know, that's cool. So maybe that's another game. That's definitely another game that I'll have on the chopping block, and I'll definitely want to check out, you know, later, hopefully. And I think that's a PS4 game, so that's something I can actually get like whenever it drops. It's supposed to be dropping this holiday or something like that. So I'll definitely check that out. And then, lastly, most importantly to me, Temtem. So for those of you who don't know about Temtem, it's basically a better Pokemon game. Like honestly, Temtem came out on the PC, I think, earlier this year. Or maybe, like, late last year. But it's basically Pokemon, but, like, a Pokemon game that actually, you know, treats its player. Like, this feels like a way, way more polished Pokemon game in terms of, like, its challenge. It's very interesting. It's very unique. Well, not even unique. I take that back. It's not unique because it's actually just Pokemon. But it has Temtem are basically the Pokemon, and you catch, you battle them, you battle gym leaders, you can customize your character. But from what I've heard about this game, from what I've seen, there's just little nuances and mechanics that they have in that game that make it better than Pokemon. Like in their game, the Temtem use like a stamina system instead of like PP. So in Pokemon, you have power points, and like when you attack, you have a limited number of attacks, right? So like say a move has 5 PP, you can only use it 5 times, and after that you can't use the move anymore. But with Temtem, they go based off of stamina system. So when you use a move, it requires a certain amount of stamina, and stamina refills. So there's never a limit to how many times you can use a move. It's just, do you have enough stamina to use a move? And honestly, it's interesting that it's coming to PS5 of all things. I didn't know if the company that made Temtem would be able to get away with having it be on like an actual console, but it's here because it's a very blatant ripoff of Pokemon. Like anybody who's played is like, bro, this is just this is a better Pokemon game. Like it's literally Pokemon from like I said, it's from the gym system to you picking out your first Temtem. And I think the only big difference is like I think all Temtem battles are double battles. But it's literally Pokemon. Even down to the music. Like if you go watch the trailer for this, the music reminds me of Pokemon music. Like they really just like made their own Pokemon game, because I feel like, you know, Pokemon's been failing to really get to challenge new players. Like Pokemon's gotten easy over the years, and as an older Pokemon fan, and older Pokemon fans understand that, yeah, it is a kid's game, but like there's nothing to challenge older players, right? And one thing I think of when I think of that is how I believe it's Black and White, Pokemon Black and White, or is it Black and White 2? They had a challenge mode. I think it's Black 2 that has the challenge mode where you can set a difficulty. And it's like, why do you have that in only one game? First of all, you had to unlock it, which is really weird. Like, you could unlock an easy mode, the normal mode, the challenge mode. And the challenge mode raised the level of the gyms. It made trainers stronger. It made them more competent. And it's like, why isn't this in every Pokemon game? There are new Pokemon fans, sure. But there are also older Pokemon fans. People have been playing Pokemon for years, and they don't need these basic tutorials anymore. Like, I know how to catch a Pokemon, bro. I don't need to be taught that every game. Let me start the game in challenge mode. They need to freaking bring Draiano in and have him make the hard mode of the game and give me a difficulty select. And it just feels like Temtem really brought that challenge that people want from Pokemon without it being Pokemon. Like, it's a difficult game, but there's also, like, ways to make it easier. So it's like, I feel like with this, honestly, I honestly hope this game does really well on PS5 to the point where Nintendo has to notice, because I think it would breed some competition. I don't know if there would be a Temtem sequel. Obviously, Temtem's not going to get as big as Pokemon is, because, like I said, it literally just is Pokemon ripped off. But if they do, if Game Freak sees this and they see that a lot of people want to buy Temtem and play Temtem, maybe that will encourage them to actually, you know, do a little something different in the next Pokemon generation. Like I said, my thing is, Pokemon doesn't have to be hard. Just give me a challenge mode. Like, give me a difficulty select. Like, honestly, like, have an easy mode where Pokemon are lower leveled and you gain more experience. Have the normal mode where however they wanted to initially make the game. And have the challenge mode where the Pokemon are higher leveled. The gym leaders have competent teams. The AI's smarter. Like, they have it to where, like, the gym leaders have maybe, competitive based teams with competitive move sets and different abilities, and they take advantage of items like choice band, focus sash, all this other stuff. Do stuff like that. Hopefully, like I said, with Temtem being on PS5, it breeds that competition, it breeds that drive into Pokemon, and be like, okay, well, people really like the Temtem game. Why do they like it? Oh, they have this stamina system? Huh. Oh, the game's a bit more challenging and, you know, makes you really concentrate. Oh, huh. So the customization's a bit better. Oh, it's an open world. Oh, okay. So maybe that will, like, spark some ideas in Game Freak and make them really take that next step. Because the problem is, it's like, they're not innovating. And Temtem is basically what Pokemon could be if they actually, like, took the time out to really make that next step forward, but they just don't want to take it. I don't know what's stopping them from taking it. It's not like they don't have the fan base, and people are going to buy these games regardless, and I get that's part of their reason for why they don't change, but that should also be part of the reason why they should change. Because if they were to make a drastic change, at first it might be met with some backlash, but then it's like, no, wait, this is the new way of Pokemon, and it'd be like, okay, cool, then, you know, it'd be better off, and I think the series can grow from there. But yeah, that was it. Honestly, like I said, if I had to give it a grade, a C. Same as Xbox. They didn't really show me anything. Even though they did say they weren't going to show any major stuff, I still would have liked this. I still was just like, eh, about it. It was some cool stuff. I saw some cool stuff. Nothing that really blew me out the water, though. So, it was nice. It was nice. Hopefully, you know, the next thing that needs to happen on Xbox and on PlayStation, they need to tell us the price of these consoles, because they have yet to tell us the price. And these things are supposed to be dropping this holiday. Like, I don't know if y'all noticed, but, like, it's only a few months away. Like, we got, like, what, 2 months before we get to November? And it's like, what are y'all doing? Like, y'all got to tell us these prices. Because my thing is, it's one of those things, right? It's a 50-50 thing. It makes you nervous because it's like, is the console going to be, like, $800? Or some crazy price that feels out of the norm? Or is it going to be like the rumored? I think the rumor was that the regular PlayStation, the PlayStation 5 with the hard drive would be $500. And the digital PlayStation 5 would be $400. So it's like, what's going on there? Are we, you know what I'm saying? Are those prices real? Are they fake? We kind of want to know, because I need to know if I'm pre-ordering this thing, or am I waiting a few years and catching it when the price gets knocked down? That's all I want to know. Like, I really just need both Sony and Microsoft to stop, you know, dancing around it. Because I feel like it's because the price is higher. It is the more expensive version. It is going to be expensive. That's why they haven't told us yet. Because they're kind of like, well, we're kind of nervous to share this, but here's the price. It's going to be, $800 pulls collar, like, do you guys want to buy that? And it's like, come on, guys, just tell us the price already. All right, y'all know the price. It's not even like y'all don't know the price. Y'all know the price. Tell me what it is. All right, because I'm getting a PS5 regardless of what the price is. I just want to know if I'm buying it, if I'm pre-ordering it, or am I waiting? That's for my case. And then Microsoft's case, they just got to show me something that makes me want the Xbox. But still, like, everybody, as your consumers, we have a right to know what the price of this thing you're trying to sell us is. So, that's that. Hopefully, both Sony and Microsoft stop this little petty Cold War beef shit and just tell us the price. I feel like they're waiting to see who announces their price first. And then they'll be like, okay, well, theirs is this much. Well, now ours is going to be cheaper. So, whatever. But, yeah, I need y'all to announce these prices already. And moving on. So, that is all I had for the gaming stuff. Now into what you're here for. Or at least what I hope you're here for. An analysis. This is the Amateur Analytics Podcast. And today's analysis is a One Piece analysis. Oh my God, who would have guessed? A One Piece analysis from the guy who really loves One Piece, even though it's not my favorite anime. My favorite anime is Bleach, and I am working on a Bleach analysis video that... I am working on a Bleach analysis that will come at a later date, but we're starting out with a One Piece one. So, this analysis is what I like to call... Zoro and Nami's dedication to Luffy. Now, Zoro and Nami's dedication to Luffy is pretty much, in my opinion, I say that out of all the Straw Hats, right? Like, I feel like all the Straw Hats are loyal to Luffy. That's not a question. But I feel like the two who have shown and shined with their loyalty is Nami and Zoro. Obviously, y'all know Zoro's loyalty. Like, you see it all throughout the series. But Nami, I think, goes a little underrated with her loyalty. And what I have here, you know, I really just looked into a lot of stuff about Nami's character and, like, her interactions with Luffy, especially, like, after Arlong Park. And we know when they really started to take each other seriously and Luffy started trusting her for real. And she finally put her faith in Luffy and became, like, his navigator. And I think it goes underrated on how loyal Nami is to Luffy. So one of my first examples for this was like back in Arlong Park, obviously, when it actually started. You know, at first, you know, she had betrayed the crew or whatever. She took the ship and then she got back to Arlong Park after Arlong lied to her and she found out he was lying. She asked Luffy for help and, you know, she cried. She asked for help. And then Luffy did something that to this day in the series has yet to be done. Luffy put his straw hat on Nami's head and said, I'm going to kick his ass. He's going to pay for hurting you or blah, 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 blah. But that, to me, really goes underrated. Luffy is super strict about people touching his straw hat, even to the point when he first put his hat on Nami's head, she recalled him saying, wait, nobody touches my hat. She's now currently wearing it at the time of Arlong Park. And it was a big deal for me because I'm like, damn, even to this day, no one else has worn that hat. No one else has put the straw hat on. Luffy's never put it on anybody else. He's only put it on Nami. And that's, to me, that's such a big deal because it shows that he really does care about her. You know, that's his friend. You know, he trusts her. And then that is where I think she realized that. That's where she, in my opinion, really started taking Luffy seriously. Like, oh shit, like, he means business. He wants me to hold on to his straw hat while he goes to fight Arlong. He means business. Like, he's actually gonna really fight for me, really help me. So that was a really big moment that I think still goes underrated in this series, especially when it comes to the relationship between Luffy and Nami. Moving on from that, we have Skypiea. So that was another time where I think she also had a straw hat on again, if I remember. I didn't write it down, but I believe she was wearing it again. But she was integral in that part to me because she obviously helped Luffy in his battle with Enel. She was able to like assist Luffy in helping him get to Enel and like combat Enel herself because she herself is mastered or has like some understanding of weather and like controlling weather. So she was able to like help Luffy in his combat, and she was more of the strategic side of that battle. And, like, the transportation side, because she brought him to Enel, and then she, like, you know, was strategically, like, helping him fight. And then, like I said, once again, she was wearing the straw hat. That's twice. Nami's wore that straw hat more than anybody else. No one else has put on that hat but Nami, and it's, like, it really just goes to show the dynamic. While Luffy was goofing off a little bit in that fight, when he realized Enel really couldn't do any damage, Nami kept him focused, and he was, like, protecting her and, you know... She was being a great support for Luffy during that battle. And like I said, again, she was wearing the hat, you know. And then my third example, my biggest one, this is like my favorite example because I feel like this is the best example of it, is Whole Cake Island. So when Nami decides to go with Luffy to Whole Cake Island, obviously she felt responsible for Sanji leaving. And, you know, she felt like she should have done something. So that's why she travels with Luffy to go to Whole Cake and help Luffy get Sanji back. And what I really liked about this is that during Whole Cake, we really get a better understanding of, like, Luffy, when Luffy gets serious, Nami, obviously the whole crew listens to him, but I feel like Nami's always quick to, like, when Luffy's like, it's like when Luffy's on that, it's serious, it's go time, Nami flips the switch right with him. Like, she, whatever he orders at that point, normally she's yelling at him, and like when he does something stupid, she's like yelling at him and getting mad. But when he gets serious, Nami straightens up. Like, he's like, you know, he really, when he takes the step as the captain, Nami's the one of the first people to be like, okay, yeah, got it. Like, he'll say, Nami, do this, and she'll be like, yes, like yes sir. Like, she's like quick to, like, okay, no more jokes, no more playing around, this is serious, Luffy's serious, I need to get serious. And we see that in Whole Cake in a few examples. One, she helped him in his battle with Cracker, which I believe she was also wearing the Straw Hat again, because somehow she just always ends up with it. She, like I said, she's the only other character to wear that hat. And so she ends up with the Straw Hat again, which obviously shows that Luffy trusts her with it when he, you know, is in something intense and, you know, he's in a super serious battle. He, like, throws his hat to Nami, and she'll just hold on to it while he fights. But she was also important in helping in that battle with Cracker, because without her, Luffy definitely probably would have lost that battle. Like, she was using her powers to, like, weaken his biscuits and make it easier for Luffy to beat Cracker. And then later in Whole Cake Island, when he was fighting Katakuri, one of my favorite scenes. Well, actually, yeah, we'll talk about that. One of my favorite scenes was when he was fighting Katakuri and he was communicating. He was talking to Nami and the rest of the crew through the mirrors. And he said, yo, destroy all the mirrors on the ship. That way they can't keep, you know, that way they can't chase you guys down and attack you from within the ship. And she was worried about Luffy, but when he said, Nami, do it, like, destroy the mirrors on the ship, she immediately shattered all the mirror in the bathroom that they were talking through, and then told everybody, like Chopper, Carrot, and Brooke, to destroy the rest of the mirrors. And I love this scene because Nami did it without hesitation. And all the other characters, like I said, even Chopper and Carrot and Brooke were all like, wait, Nami, like, what are you doing? Why'd you destroy the mirror? Like, that's the only way for Luffy to get back on the ship. She's like, he said to do it. It's the captain's orders. Like, those words to me always, like, really spoke volumes for how loyal Nami is, because she said it's the captain's orders. Even other members of his crew, like Chopper and Brooke, were nervous. Like, wait, what are you doing? Like, that's, you know what I'm saying? They were concerned, but Nami's faith in Luffy was so strong that when he told her to do it, don't worry about me, I'll catch up, I'll meet you guys, you know, at I think it was Cacao Island, I'll meet you guys at that island. She didn't hesitate. She didn't question him. She said, okay, Luffy, boom, destroyed the mirror. She ordered everybody to destroy the mirrors on ship. And I love how, like, dramatic that scene was. Like I said, all the other characters are like, wait, Nami, what are you doing? What are you doing? What's wrong with you? Why would you do that? And she's like, it's the captain's orders. Let's move. Like, destroy all the mirrors on the ship. That's what Luffy said. And another moment, to go back a little bit, back when Sanji rejoined with the crew, you know, like, when he rejoined him, and she was still mad at him. And I love that, because it's like, you know, like, you betrayed our crew. Like, you went against Luffy. You fought Luffy. I'm never forgiving you for that. Because out of all people, you know, Sanji's been loyal to Luffy, but Nami is indebted to Luffy in so many ways. And also because she herself has betrayed Luffy once and realized that, no, Luffy really is my friend. He really does care about me. So when Sanji did it, I feel like she had that more personal attack. She was able to, like, she took it a little more personal because she's experienced the same thing where, like I said, she betrayed Luffy temporarily and then, you know, the Arlong thing. So I feel like her addressing Sanji like, yeah, you know, it's cool that you're back, it's whatever, but I will never, like, I remember that even that shot in the manga and in anime was really well done. It's just a deadpan face of Nami staring down Sanji like, I will never forgive you for what you did to Luffy, period. Like, I don't care about anything that happened in relation to your family, none of that. You betrayed our crew. You went against our crew. You fought our captain. I'm never forgiving you for that. I'm never letting that go. Like, like you're saying, we can move on from it, but I'm never gonna forgive you for what you did. And I love that, because even Sanji was shook. Sanji's like, oh shit, like, she's serious. Because Nami doesn't, like I said, normally Nami's kind of like annoyed by Luffy because Luffy's like loud, obnoxious, and whatever. But like, it was nice to see her really look at Sanji and be like, no, like, you fucked up. Don't, you know what I'm saying? You disrespected our captain. I'm not forgiving you for that. And another thing also, like, one thing that gets overlooked is that Nami kind of runs the crew for the most part. Like, Luffy trusts her with the crew. And not to say that he doesn't trust other people. Like, obviously, there have been times where Sanji led the crew without Luffy. And there's been times where Zoro's led the crew, like, when Luffy wasn't around. But it's interesting that Nami is probably, like, the next person that Luffy will trust with the crew. Like, if the crew gets separated, he's like, okay, Nami's with them. It's fine. Because he trusts Nami. Like, he knows that Nami's smart and that she's resourceful. She's not the strongest person by far. In fact, she's probably the weakest person on the crew. But, like, she's crafty. She's intelligent. He knows that she can, if they get into tight situations, Nami can probably figure a way out of it. Like, he knows how resourceful she is and how slick and sneaky she is. And he trusts her a lot. Even so far, like, when you look back in Zoe and Inuwara, she was telling Nami about, oh, you know, it's gonna take a really skilled navigator to get to Laugh Tale. And Luffy was like patting Nami on the back, like, oh, don't worry, Nami, you got this. Like, our navigator right here is super skilled. She can totally get us to Laugh Tale. Like, dying faith in Nami is something that I really respect. Like I said, I really feel like it goes underrated in the series of how loyal, like, Nami is to Luffy and how Luffy is to Nami. Like, he really trusts her. Like I said, like, even though she's not by any means the strongest member of the crew, he trusts her with the crew if he's not around. Like I said, he knows that he can rely on her resourcefulness, her cleverness to figure out some way, even if she physically can't protect the crew. She can still protect the crew with her intelligence. And I like that. I really like that. So that was Nami. Like I said, I really feel like that relationship's a little underdeveloped, and like I said, her dedication to Luffy and the goal, and she's obviously declared that Luffy will be the king of the pirates. I think almost everybody in the crew has done that at this point, but like, Nami's declared that, so that's always another solidifying factor to me when a character on the crew says, no, the man who will be the king of the pirates is Monkey D. Luffy. So I think that's a really underrated relationship. Hopefully, you know, Oda goes into a little bit more. I would love to see more of that dynamic of Nami and Luffy. Just a little bit more. And a lot of people think, or there is a theory out there that the original four Straw Hats are going to get new arcs. We already kind of had it with Sanji. With Wano, we kind of have it with Zoro. Elbaf is going to be Usopp's arc. And then Lodestar, which is the island we recently found out about, Lodestar/Laugh Tale is going to be Nami's arc, because, you know, it's going to be her navigating them to those places. And I really hope they flesh it out a little bit more. I hope Oda really goes into detail about, like, the Nami and Luffy relationship and, you know, just really expressing, like I said, giving us more, showing us more of this loyalty, because I really do like it. Like I said, it's one of those underrated relationships in the Straw Hat crew, is that, you know, Nami's loyal as hell to Luffy. Like I said, when Sanji betrayed them, Nami was pissed. She was mad. She's like, yo, I'm never going to forgive you for that shit. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm glad you're back. You know, it's nice to have you back. It's cool. And I'm glad Luffy forgave you, but no, like, you betrayed us. You fought our captain. It's almost like she did what Zoro, the next person we're about to talk about, did during Enies Lobby with Usopp. It was like, yeah, like, I forgive you. It's cool that you want to come back and all that, but, like, you got to apologize to Luffy, and I'm not forgiving you. Like, I don't give a shit. So that's cool. And so it's nice. Like I said, I really hope Oda, like, focuses on their relationship a little bit. I hope, honestly, all the Straw Hats get more interactions. I think that's something that's underrated and something we don't get enough of, is the interactions between the Straw Hats. So hopefully that gets, like, fleshed out, and I'm really curious to see, you know, what Nami does later on in the series. Right now, she's in a pretty interesting spot. Like I said, we'll talk about that in the next episode, but, you know, hopefully, you know, Oda fleshes that out. And then moving on to Zoro, the second strongest on the Straw Hat crew. I'm tired of this Zoro, Sanji. No, Zoro's the second strongest on the crew. It's Luffy, then Zoro, then Sanji. I'm tired of y'all trying to sit here and cap like Sanji and Zoro are equals. Maybe pre-time skip, they were close. But now Zoro's definitively stronger than Sanji. I don't want to hear it. Anyways, moving on to my favorite character, Wano, Roronoa. Anyway, Zoro's loyalty obviously has been proven countless times. From the beginning of the series, it's always mentioned how, like, Zoro's been loyal to Luffy, and it's always impressive too, because it's one of those things, like, it's been talked about, it's been shown. I think Oda's done a really, really, really good job of showing us this dedication all the way back as early as, like, Baratie, like, when Zoro lost to Mihawk and he raised his sword and says, you know, I'll never lose again. Is that okay? king of the pirates. Zoro was the first, not only the first mate, but he was the first person to call Luffy the king of the pirates. Everybody else after that, everybody else said it afterwards, but Zoro at that moment was the first person to be like, no, Luffy, you're going to be the king. My captain's going to be the king of the pirates. I'm going to be the world's greatest swordsman. He deserves nothing less than the best on his crew. And then moving on ahead a little bit to Enies Lobby, obviously one of my favorite Zoro scenes is the scene where they discuss Usopp. Enies Lobby, it's the end of Enies Lobby. My favorite scene is when they discuss Usopp and how, you know, it's fine if you want him back, but he has to apologize first. And I love this scene because it shows the dynamic of the crew. It shows that, like, you know, Zoro made a good point, to the point where even Sanji agreed with him. And, you know, Sanji and Zoro never agree on anything, but even Sanji was like, no, he's right. Like, we're not. In Zoro's lines, Zoro's words were some of my favorites. He's like, oh, you know, I don't mind that you're an easygoing captain. That's cool. But you can't let people walk over you. If you let Usopp just come back without apologizing, then there's no respect. You know what I'm saying? Like, Usopp has to earn the respect of the crew back. He has to beg you to come back. Because at the end of the day, we're not pretending to be pirates. This isn't a game. This is the real deal. And one of the other lines he said that I like was like, we're better off without a crew member. I think it was, it's, we're better off without a crew member who doesn't trust his captain's decisions when things get rough. A crew that lacks respect and a captain that doesn't demand it is gonna fall apart. Period. And you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we can't let Usopp back on unless he takes this seriously. Like, all of us are taking this seriously. We have bounties on our head, Luffy. Like, we can't. Like I said, we're better off without a flimsy flip-flop crew member like Usopp if he's just gonna run away every time you make a strong decision. So Zoro's dedication's been there from the beginning, and he always defends Luffy's honor. He's quick to defend it. He doesn't let anybody trample or talk trash about Luffy. Like, he's like, no, like, I gotta protect my captain. Usually in instances when they're in danger, Zoro's instinct is like, okay, Luffy, are you all right? Cool. Luffy, what do you want me to do? And then he'll be like, oh, Zoro, I want you to protect the ship. He's like, all right, got it. Like, you know, like, Zoro does, like, Nami doesn't really question Luffy's orders. Doesn't ever question Luffy's orders. Whatever Luffy says to do, Zoro does it. And that's, like, that loyalty that I love to see. Like I said, we've all seen it before. Obviously, the biggest moment for this was Zoro's sacrifice back in Thriller Bark, where, you know, he stated that, you know, we said, what good am I if I can't even protect my captain? I don't deserve to be the world's greatest if I can't protect my captain. And Luffy deserves only the best. And if I die here, I guess I wasn't the best. Or, you know, I guess I wasn't meant to be. So it's like that moment where he just lays down his swords, offers to take all of Luffy's pain to protect him. Obviously a classic moment, probably one of the top moments in One Piece. Everyone, you know, like, understands that's a big deal, and they respect Zoro for it. As like I said, for a lot of people, that's what made them like Zoro as a character, because no one, even though Sanji was willing to do it, it means more coming from Zoro, because we know that Zoro himself has this really high ambition. Like, he wants to be the world's greatest swordsman. Like, his drive, his ambitions are so strong that when other people from other crews see Zoro, and he's like, oh, this guy, he's so strong, he's so driven, like, who's his captain? Like, he follows somebody else. He could be the captain of his own crew, yet he follows somebody. So that shows, you know, the relationship and the loyalty that he has to Luffy. And then going into the time skip, another really good moment that I think also is a little underrated is when Zoro asks Mihawk to train him. Now, what's crazy about that is, like, we all know Mihawk is the world's greatest swordsman. That's Zoro's goal. His goal was to kill Mihawk. And it's funny because even in that conversation, Mihawk was like, what is your aim here? He's like, oh, it's to kill you. Like, I still want to kill you, but I know I'm not strong enough to do it. And at the moment, I need to get stronger, not just for my sake, but for the sake of my crew, you know? And Mihawk comments that, oh, you know, it takes a lot for a man like Zoro to set aside his pride just to serve Luffy. Like, Straw Hat must really be amazing. Like, he has to be a really amazing guy if someone as prideful and as ambitious and driven as Zoro is willing to, like, bow his head to the man he wants to kill and say, will you train me? Will you help me become a stronger swordsman so I can, you know, be stronger for Luffy and for my crew? And I think that's a really, obviously, another really deep moment showing Zoro's dedication to Luffy. Even before that, when Zoro found out that Ace died, like, he was already trying to leave and catch up to Luffy. But when he found out that that Ace died, he immediately tried to leave again. He was, like, rushing to find a boat and trying to get off the island because he knew Luffy needed him. Like, he knew that, oh, shit, like, you know, he just lost his brother. I gotta be there for him. I gotta go to my captain's side. Like, I have to go help him. I have to, like, you know, be by his side, support him, because that's my job. You know, that's my role as the first mate, as the vice captain. I'm tired of people saying Zoro's not the vice captain of this fucking crew. He is. He's the vice captain. Just accept it. Niggas out here talking about some Usopp is the vice captain. Shut up, man. It's definitely Zoro. Roronoa Woro is the vice captain of the Straw Hat crew. I'm tired of people saying he's not. Anyways, he knew he had to sacrifice. He had to set aside his own pride and admit that he wasn't strong enough, that he wasn't good enough. And that was important because, like I said, Mihawk acknowledged that, okay, cool, fine, I'll train you. And he comments like, yeah, like, Straw Hat must really be something else if he's got a man like this on his crew, who's this strong, driven guy who has a crazy goal of being the world's greatest swordsman serving under him. So that's another good example of Zoro's dedication. And then this isn't the last example, but it's another more recent example, because I feel like it hasn't really been highlighted. It's been little nuances here and there and little stuff, but it hasn't been crazy. But the last other example I like to think of is Punk Hazard, when Zoro, you know, call Luffy out. Like, that's another thing that, like, Zoro can do. Like, another thing that's why I think the bond between Zoro and Luffy is interesting. As far as I've seen, Zoro's really the only person on the crew who can call Luffy out on his bullshit. Like, when Luffy lost to Caesar, Zoro straight up told him, like, hey, you need to get your act together. We're not in paradise anymore. We're not in the grand line. We're not in the paradise part of the grand line. We're in the new world. Our enemies are going to be way stronger. The Marines are stronger here. Like, everybody's stronger here. You need to get serious. Like, it's almost like he gave Luffy an order, and Luffy took him seriously. Luffy didn't argue with him, didn't say nothing back. He just looked at him and said, yeah, I got it. Like, you know, okay, I got it. I'll take it seriously. And I thought that was a very, like, underrated moment. Because literally he's just like looking for Luffy, like, Luffy, where are you? Hey, we're in the new world. Get serious. We can't keep playing around. This isn't, like you said before, we're not pretending to be pirates. This isn't a game. We're in the new world. If you want to be the king of the pirates, you know what I'm saying? You got to get serious. So, like, he didn't say those words, but, like, that's basically how he challenged him. Like, hey, get it together. Get it together. Like, we got to get going. And then Luffy, like I said, didn't even argue with Zoro. He's like, yeah, like, I understand. Like, he kind of took Zoro's words to heart and was like, all right, cool, let's get serious. And then there have been other little things. Like, when they were in Dressrosa and Pika was trying to attack them and Zoro jumped up and blocked his attack. It was like, yeah, my captain's off limits, you know, stay away from him. I'll take care of it. He trusts, like I said, Luffy trusts Zoro and Nami to, like, lead the crew in other instances. And he trusts Zoro to handle any fight. He doesn't have to worry about it. When they were going to Whole Cake, like, before they left Zoro to go to Whole Cake, you know, Zoro brought up a good point. He's like, hey, look, Luffy, like, you know, we've already challenged Kaido. You know, we should probably focus on that. We need to focus on Kaido because we can't get Big Mom involved because that's too many Yonko, like, you know, jumping down our throats. Like, I get you want to get Sanji back, but, like, try not to, you know, overdo it while you're at Whole Cake, because we still have to fight Kaido. That's our target right now. So, like, that kind of dynamic of, like, reminding Luffy of his goals and kind of, like, challenging his position as the captain, not in a way that makes it seem like he's being an insubordinate. It's more just reminding Luffy, like, hey, look, you know, we got goals. You know, you have goals. I have goals. We gotta get serious. You gotta be serious about what you're doing. You gotta be careful about what you're doing. Be serious about what you're doing. Because if you're going to Whole Cake and you're gonna be fighting Big Mom, remember, we still gotta fight Kaido too. So just be prepared. Like, it's like that constant reminder of, hey, look, you know, you're the captain. I get it. But remember, you're the captain. Like, you can't be screwing around too much, because if you do, the crew isn't gonna make it. So that's cool. And then just add a little caveat to this before I wrap up. I just wanna say, like, this goes to Luffy. Obviously, like I talked about it already with Nami and Zoro, but Luffy does really trust them. I feel like when it comes to the crew, like I said, we've had instances where Sanji has taken the crew, and Luffy does trust Sanji too. He's had some Sanji's had some solo missions. I think of the train when they were on Sea Train. He told Sanji, you know, give him hell, like take him out. If you take out as many of those guys as you can, you know, like trusting him to fight on his own. And then when you know when they left Dressrosa, he trusted Sanji to like protect Nami and Brook and Chopper and Caesar. Like you know what I'm saying? Like the Sanji does get the love, but you know, that's not who we're talking about. I'll probably give Sanji his own analysis some other time, but right now we're focused on Luffy. We're focusing on Zoro and Nami's dedication to Luffy. And like I said, I really like it. I really like the dynamic that they have. Like, so hopefully moving forward, we get some more Straw Hat interaction. I think that's one thing that has been lacking from One Piece is the interaction between the characters. Obviously, you know, the East Blue Saga is where you get those interactions, where you get the introduction to Luffy, to Zoro, to Nami, to Sanji, to Usopp's personalities and characters. They kind of, the interactions were there. But as the crew got bigger, we lose those interactions. I really hope Oda, like, finds an arc or finds a couple of chapters to like really bring back that dynamic, really bring back that sense of like camaraderie and family that they have. Because like I said, we've seen that Luffy does really trust Zoro and Nami with responsibility. Like he's put the safety of the crew members in their hands countless times. And like I said, he doesn't worry about Nami. Like he's concerned for Nami when she gets separated, but he knows he doesn't worry too much because he knows she's smart enough. And then in Zoro's case, he doesn't worry too much about Zoro because he knows he's strong enough. So it's like, I like that he really does have faith in his crew members. Like I said, Sanji, you know, he trusts Sanji's strength. He believes in Sanji too. But like I said, that's not what we're talking about. But it's good to really feel like Luffy does trust his comrades. And over the time as the series goes on, you know, hopefully we get those interactions again. Because like I said, One Piece looks like it's going to be wrapping up soon. There's been a thing where like One Piece is going to end in like 5 years, blah, blah, blah. Then there's like this article that came out saying, oh, you might want to start rereading One Piece because it might be ending. But I hope we get some more interactions with these characters. I really, like I said, I think Oda's done a good job of highlighting the loyalty and dedication on Nami and Zoro's behalf, and how much they trust Luffy and how much they believe in him. And like I said, he's also shown how much Luffy trusts them. Like I said, always just trusting them to protect the crew when he's not around and look out for the crew. And like I said, even though Nami's not that strong, he trusts her for intelligence. Zoro does have the strength, so he trusts Zoro strength-wise. And just even when they interact together, you know, like I said, and Zoro, when he, you know, they were talking about getting the latch on, how it's going to be difficult. Nami was kind of blushing when Luffy was giving her that compliment. And then when we got to Wano and Zoro finally found Luffy again, he like freaked out. Was like, oh, Zoro, he like hugged him. And it was like, hey, Luffy, you're okay. Like, you know, like they are friends and they do trust each other. And they always, you know, Zoro's always got Luffy's back. Even right now in the current state of the story, when Luffy got separated from the group and ran off, Zoro's like, I'm gonna go find him. And then they've been working together, fighting their way through the Beast Pirates. Like I said, we're gonna talk about that probably on the next episode of the podcast. But you know, it's cool to see. And like I said, it's a little underrated. It goes a little underrated in Nami's favor, because like I said, we see it with Zoro all the time. But Nami, like I said, I think it goes a little underrated. But hopefully we see more of it. And yeah, that's it. That's my analysis. I know, you know, this one's it was a little bit short. I think it's a bit shorter than my other analysis, but I, you know, try to make these not too long. I don't want to like bore you guys with a super, super long analysis. Maybe other analysis videos that I work on, which I do have two scripts for two other analysis videos I'm gonna do later on sometime in the future. So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, that's all I have for this episode of the Amateur Analytics Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend. You know what I'm saying? If you're listening to this on Spotify, let people know. If you, you know, show support, I appreciate it. Also, you know, stay safe out there. You know, have fun. And I am out of here.